All right, welcome back. This is, if you've been with us all day, well, hats off to you and well done. And this is the last session for today. We've still got a full day of content for you tomorrow and even another half day on the Thursday.
And even more.
Yeah, and it's all good. This session is a load of fun. A lot of great new features that I'm going to show you in this one. This is about sharing files and data in Windows Phone 8.1. So we're going to talk through a couple of things about app-to-app communication, about file associations, URL associations, just briefly those ones. They're not new features. But the share contract, this is a new feature, and it's really, really exciting. And also the file open and save pickers. They don't sound very exciting, but actually, once you start working with them and realizing what they give you and how they work, they're really exciting. So I'm going to run through these topics now. Okay, sharing in Windows Phone 8.1. There's a number of different ways to do sharing. First of all, you can do this URI. This is what is often erroneously called app-to-app communication. It's not only app-to-app communication, although that is one thing you can do with it. But URI associations is where an app launches a URI, and it's kind of decoupled. It doesn't know who's going to handle it. So it just launches it out to the OS, and the OS looks for an app that is installed that has registered to handle it. And if it's not, if there isn't one, it'll take you to the store and say, do you want to go and find an app to do this? So the shell is involved in that. And but also, the reason why it's not only app-to-app communication is that it's also used for launching into settings and that sort of thing, or for launching the browser and doing a search. Or actually, you can even, there's a URI for launching the mail client and starting sending an email, for example. So there's lots of different uses of launch URI async. But the one that's in the app-to-app communication camp is that you can actually create your own custom URI, like this example is Jumpstart, and you could have another app that's registered to handle the Jumpstart URI, and they communicate with each other in that app A launches app B effectively and passes it whatever data you've put into that URI, so in the query string or whatever. So that's a simple way of doing a sharing. The bigger brother of that works the same way, but this time you're launching a file. So this ties in with what you were saying about the SD cards. Mm-hmm. So if the receiving file, the one on the right there, has registered for a particular file extension, it says, okay, I'm going to handle .jumpstart files. And then this app on the left launches a file of type .jumpstart, then it will go straight, the other app get launched, and the file will be passed to the receiving app. So you can obviously put quite a lot of data in there. So that's a file association. And obviously you can't, if you're a third party app, you can't register for, you know, .x or, you know, .pptx. Or there is a list of reserved file extensions. So you have to look in the docs for that. Yep. But, you know, typically for file-to-file communication, you create a custom file type and use that to communicate between two apps. And it's very seamless. You know, there's no, if there's only one app installed, it's as if you are navigating from a page in the source app to a page in the receiving app, and it looks like they're all part of the same app. So it's really seamless and really real nice way of having a couple of apps communicate with each other. The new kid on the block is the share contract. So this is a much more flexible arrangement of sharing than the first two ones. So in this one, the shell gets involved with a share picker, and this the UI in the middle there is the OS popping up some UI to the user. So again, the sharer and the sharee are completely decoupled. So this is what the contract bit of it comes into it, in that the sender just builds a data package that conforms to whatever the contract says it needs to, and it just throws it out there. And the OS then puts up a list. It gives the user a list of apps that it knows are capable of handling that particular kind, the kinds of content that the source app is sharing. And then the user picks who gets it. So the sender doesn't get involved. It's the user is in control. They pick the app, and then the app that they choose fires up and handles that content and does whatever it does with it, Facebook, Twitter, or could be your own app or whatever. So it's really flexible and really powerful. So just quickly about file and URI associations. These are custom URI associations. Like I said, you can link those into the core experiences by launching an HTTP, which launches the browser. There's mail to for email, that kind of stuff. And launch URI async, which is an example there where you're launching into Facebook using an FB colon URI syntax. And you can use custom ones to launch into your own app as well. File type, you can launch files into the built-in apps, like you can launch, if you launch a .docx, you'll end up with Word on the phone will fire up to handle it. But also you can do custom file types as well. Here's an example of getting a file from your local storage called mydoc.pdf and then launching that file out. And that will launch a PDF reader app should you have one installed. So that's one example of how you would launch a file to another app.
And if you have multiple ones?
So if you have multiple files, apps installed, it will put up a what we call a disambiguation dialogue. Basically it says, I don't know, which one do you want to handle this? It'll give you a list of the apps that are installed to handle it. That's different from Big Windows, by the way, which in Big Windows, if you have multiple apps that can handle it, it will only ever, in the control panel, the user controls which app is the preferred app for a particular protocol or for a file type. So then it will just launch that one. You need to register file and URI associations, the receiving side of things. So if an app is capable of handling .recipe.rcp files, which is the example we see on this slide here, we've registered a file type association on the declarations tab in the manifest editor. And there you can just, at its simplest, all you need to do is put the file type in of .rcp and save that. And then that is your app is registered to handle .rcp files. Now, again, on the receiving end, what happens when your app is activated to handle a file or a URI? For file activation, you need to override in your app.xaml.cs, override a method called onFileActivated in the app class. And you could be getting launched from cold, so you just need the standard boilerplate code that you normally have for your onLaunched method, where it creates the frame and all that usual stuff. But then, after all the standard frame initialization code, you have this bit of code at the bottom here, where it says something like, well, you're going to navigate to the page that's going to handle it, so we're going to a page called bugquerypage.xaml here. And then after you've navigated to it, you then need to pass the file to it. And the way to do that is when you're coding up your bug query page, put a property on it. And in this example, we've called it file event. You set the args, the file activated event args that you've received into this on file activated method, and you put that value into that file event property on that page that you've just navigated to. So that way you've passed the content onto the page. The page can then open that file and do whatever it wants to do with it. A similar thing for URI activation, where this time you need to override the onActivated method. And there's a number of actual different ways that the onActivated method can be fired. So you need to look at the iActivated event args and find out, is it a protocol activation kind? If it is, then the args you've been passed are actually a protocol activated event args, and then you kind of basically do the same pattern you did before. So do the standard frame building up, and then pass those args onto the target page so that it can handle the activation. Now, in the sample code, there is some demos for this, which are kind of interesting, but I'm actually going to move straight onto the share contract in the interests of time. So, sharing isn't new to Windows Phone. I mean, obviously, we had file associations and URI associations in the last release. But we also had these APIs, Silverlight APIs, which are share link task and share status task. But they're a bit limited in what they can do. You basically share a link, well, share a status, the string. So, and the internal apps also had a lot of share UI built into them, but that was only the internal ones. Not actually, so you can share through NFC, you can share page, share contact, but they're specific to the built-in apps So it's all a bit, you know, it's okay, but not as flexible as we'd like. So enter the share contract, which kind of is a new way of thinking of sharing. And obviously this comes from Windows, big Windows. It enables the user to drive the sharing between apps. And it kind of makes it extremely flexible. So what it effectively means is that when the next latest and greatest new social network suddenly goes viral and we get the app onto Windows Phone, then that will be available like really quickly instead of having to wait for, you know, first party apps to be updated to kind of be able to share content with this new social network. It'll all just work because we've got this decoupling between the app that is sharing content and the app that is receiving the content all through this share contract. And we're making sure that it works really well on low cost devices, the 512 meg devices. That's important as well. We've engineered it to do that. What we feel is that there'll be a great many apps. So when you're building an app, a third-party app, if you might think there must be some stuff that this app can share. So whatever this app is doing, if it's doing anything of interest, you might feel that at some point in the UI, you would put a little button on the app bar saying, share, do you want to share this content? And it will share, you know, maybe the app allows the user to take a photo or something, so you can share that content. So many apps will be a share source. Only a few apps will be a share target. So these are apps that are there to be shared to. And the obvious ones you'll think of are Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, all this kind of stuff. But there could be others as well. And the Mail app for sharing through email, NFC sharing through Tap to Share. You know, there are obvious ones that come to mind. So if you think that your app could be one that could add to that collection, well, great, be a share target. But there's not going to be so many of them. So share source, using this contract, if you implement the share source contract, what you're telling Windows is your app has something to share, some kind of data, which can be quite flexible. It could be files, it could be just text string, could be images, it could be HTML, you know, so lots of other things, two other apps. So many apps will be a share source. If you implement the share target part of the share contract into your app, you're saying to Windows, hey, yeah, I know how to handle text. I know how to handle shared images. I know I can do this. So you then make yourself available to be on the receiving end of this. And it kind of helps, this kind of decoupling helps handle this potentially volatile situation where you never know what's going to be the next greatest sharing target. So And you can also integrate with built-in sharing. So there's going to be a lot of the first-party apps, the built-in apps on the phone are going to be share targets. And the obvious one, email, messaging, tap and send, Bluetooth for sending files, OneNote and Room. So you can share stuff with other people in your room. And a lot of the built-in apps are going to be share sources as well, of course. The Photo Viewer, Internet Explorer for sharing pages, music, office and contacts. So there's a lot of built-in, and you can actually very easily involve yourself in all this good fun. So just to reiterate, this is the share contract UX. The experience for this is that for on the phone. Now, on big Windows, you will know that you swipe in from the right and you get the charms bar up, and there is a share icon on the charms bar. So that in Windows is how a Windows Store app initiates the share contract through the share. So you've got the built-in UI on Windows 8, which is the charms bar. Windows Phone, you need to provide some kind of UI yourself. So here we've got an example of an app bar button in your app. And now actually what happens is then the user taps that. You make a simple call from your source out to the shell to say, hey, I've got something to share. The shell actually calls back to you and say, oh, what have you got to share? And you say, oh, I've got a picture to share, or I've got text, or I've got HTML, or something like that. And at that point, then it bounces back to the shell, and the share picker is displayed to the end user, where the apps that are installed on the phone that are registered, have registered through the share target contract, that they know how to handle the content that the source app is sharing out, will be listed. And there's also this most recently used list as well, because this could potentially be a fairly long list. So the ones that the user prefers to use will be shown at the top, and then everything else is underneath. Once they've selected an app, then the target app is activated, and it shows some transient share UI. So it'll probably show just one page sufficient to allow the user to confirm or deny this, that they want this to happen. And then it makes a call back to the share contract saying, yeah, I'm done, and control is returned to the source app. So that's kind of how it works.
So it's so with big Windows, you have the share flyout that comes over, and with Windows Phone, it's a dedicated UI that we go out to and come back to.
Yep.
Okay.
That's right. This is how it works in a flow diagram. Weirdly. So, okay, so what happens is the source app registers with the data transfer manager, or in Windows, let's get these button boxes up. There's something gone wrong with my animation here. It's not how it's meant to be. Right, there we go. Okay, so sorry about that. So what actually happens is that the user selects on the phone the share UI on the Windows phone. You see the light blue box on the left there, and then that goes, it calls out to the share picker, to the shell API. And if you're on big Windows, it gets to the same place by the user selecting the share charm on the right by swiping the charms bar from the right. And that gets to the same box, at which point the share picker sends an event, or fires back an event, which to the source app and says, okay, what have you got to share? So it receives that event and fills this object called a data package. So this data package is the formalized way of the share contract for the share source. And it fills that and it sends it back to the share picker. The share picker filters the list of target apps that know how to handle that particular data package, shows the UI to the user. The user selects the app and then it activates that app and sends it the content. So the share target app gets activated for sharing, processes the data package contents, reports complete to the share, and then we return control back to the source. So what do you do in code? What does that mean? Actually, very simple from a share source point of view. You would need to, in your on Navigator 2 on whatever page where you want to share some stuff, you call Data Transfer Manager, get for current view, data requested, that's an event, so you hook that event. So we've got an on-share data requested event handler that we're not seeing on this slide. We'll come to that in a moment. When you leave the page, you need to deregister from that as well. And then at the point when the user activates the UI, like the app bar button, to say, yeah, I want to share something, all you do is call datatransfermanager.showshareUI, and that is the first call out to the share picker. But the user doesn't see anything yet. Actually, what the next thing that happens is that on that data requested event fires back in the share source, because it's the share picker is going to ask you, okay, what have you got? So you, in your on-share data requested, you fill in, you create a data package, and that data package is passed to you in the data requested event args object that comes into this event. So you just fill it in with data. The simplest way you can fill it in is just set, there's a number of set methods on it. So here we're going request.data.setText, and you put some text into it. You must set a title on this. The description is pretty optional. In actual fact, on Windows Phone, you never see it. It is shown in the sharing UI that's displayed on big Windows. So you fill that in and give it, and then obviously the event handler completes. And at that point, sharing process carries on. Here's a more complex example of putting some stuff into the data package. This is an example of actually getting a file and putting that into the data package. You'll notice in the middle there, we've got an await storage file, .get file from application URI async. So it's reading a file called needle.jpg from the installation folder. So this is one that you've got in the assets folder in your app, this ms-apex, that means the installation folder. Because we're doing an async method in there, there's an await in the middle of that, you need to request get deferral before calling it. And when you have finished building the package, you call deferral.complete. It's similar to the thing we saw before. So you need to use the deferrals to when you're doing any async work. Set the title on the data package, space needle, optional description. And then you need to set your storage items to the file. You can set a web link as well if you want to. There's a lot of set stuff you can put into this data package to describe as fully as possible the content that you're sharing. In fact, this is a long list of all of the set methods that you can use to put stuff into that data package. You can set an application link. This is a URI link. This is the same as this URI associations we were talking about before. You can put one of them into the data package so that the share target could, if it wanted to, call back into your app using the URI association for the your calling app to do something else.
Wow.
Think about that for a second.
It's like Inception.
Yeah. And then set bitmap. You can put a bitmap in there, set data. Set data providers, interesting. Well, if you want to put some stuff in the data package that's going to take quite a long time, then actually what you can do is kind of actually declare a callback method into the data package, but don't actually supply the data itself at that point. So what happens is the data package goes over to the share target. The share target then calls your callback method, and it's at that point later on that the content is sent on. So this is a way of handling long-running stuff, and you can kind of put better UI to the user to tell them what's going on. You can put some HTML format in there, some RTF data, and storage items, files or folders in there, or text and web links. So very, very rich what you can put in there. We have demo, sharing source. So let's go and get that up. I need to sign in everywhere. I've been talking too much. Right. Okay. That's on there, and I should get some stuff over here to help me do this. I could even spell it right. Okay. So I've got a. Let's go off to what session are we on?
This is 10.
10, here we go. So it's a very simple little app, this. Keep it simple, it's always better. When this loads, let's simple sharing demo. In mainpage.xaml.cs, let's just have a look at the code. What it takes to be a share source, not very much, actually. I mean, obviously, if you get more complex about the data you're storing. And I've got a nice demo of share source in the very last session of this whole Jumpstart, session 23, which is about Silverlight apps. Because all this is available for Silverlight and for Windows Runtime apps. Let's not forget that. So here we go. On Navigator 2, we've got Data Transfer Manager, get for current view data. We're going to hook into the data requested event there. We're unhooking it on Navigator from. We are... At some point, we've got an app bar button where we're going to call show share UI, and when the share picker wants to know what it is we want to share, then this is going to fire in here. So all we're doing is, well, we don't actually need a deferral really, but it's good practice to no harm in doing it because there's no async calls in here. But you must set a title, and all we're going to do is put some text into it from the screen. So let's actually just run that. On the emulator. Mm-hmm. And here's our really frankly stunning app. Put some text in there. By the way, anybody who doesn't know how, if you want to actually use the PC keyboard, if you do...
You should be able to just type with the...
Oh, okay. Can you do that?
With 8.1, you can just type.
Oh, right. Okay. So Matthias has just told me something. I don't know. I'm supposed to be the font of all everything 8.1. But yeah, in Windows Phone 8, you actually had to put, you can still do this, page down hides that.
Yep.
And page up puts it back again. But Matthias tells me, actually, all I need to do is type, oh my God, wow, they just thought of everything in this release. That's so cool. And there's my little share thing down on the app bar. I'm going to hit the share. Now, this is the shell. This is not anything to do with my app. This is the shell saying, oh, okay, who do you want to share it with? And I say, well, I'm just going to share it with OneNote. So we share it with OneNote, and the OneNote share target has just stuck that text into a quick note. So you can see how OneNote shares has handled text. If I'd put images in, I guess it might have put the image in there. I don't know. I haven't tried that with OneNote. Depends how the app's built. So you've already got two share targets built into the emulator, simple ones for text sharing. So Actually, that's the demo. How stunning was that?
Woo.
Yeah. All right. What about the other side of the coin? If you want to be a share target, I was like, not many of you are going to want to do this, but this one, you need to put in your manifest, you have to register what it is that you understand, you can absorb? What kind of content can you handle? And as there's a list there on the left of the different kinds of data formats that are supported. And these are the ones you can register into the manifest. You'll see in the right there, this is the UI from the manifest editor, where you can enter one or more different ones of these data formats. And you just keep hitting the add new to add more. So you just do that. And also underneath there is the supported file type stuff as well. So for files that are shared, then you can enter them in there as well. So different kinds of data formats and different kinds of files that this particular kind of app knows how to handle. So again, you could use this as a way of passing custom files between a source app and a target app as well.
Yep.
And if there's only one app, you know, if there's only one app, I guess it will just go seamlessly across to the shared target.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, that share picker UI only comes up if there's any ambiguity about who might want to handle it. So there you go. That actually is the registration side of things. Now, what then happens? So once you're registered and the app is installed, thereafter the share picker knows about you, and it will include you in this thing about figuring out whether you're a potential target. Now, if you are active, if the user chooses your app, then your app will be fired up, and you need to override in your share target app the on share target activated method. And then we get the whole usual kind of, usual startup kind of logic. And then we can navigate to the share page, which is our transient UI. So many apps that are share targets might even have a page that's solely dedicated to handling share activations rather than being one of their regular pages that the user would interact with in normal use. So you can just navigate to that page and pass it in navigation arguments the args.share operation, which is that data package. And then in the on navigated to of that page where this is going to handle it, you get the e dot parameter is the navigation args that were in the on navigated to, so you know that is the share operation object. So you then just go into that share operation object and you can pull out the content that was put into that data package. So here we've got an example of pulling out the title and the description. We're getting the text from it, from that particular data package. And there's an example of pulling out a file that might be in a data package or a bitmap image. So there's lots of different kinds of content that's being pulled out in this specific example. So this kind of works. This bit of logic here, it would be exactly the same in a Windows runtime app or in a Silverlight app. So all good. But the one thing that's different is that the transient UI must show some kind of thing that the user says, okay, yeah, I'm good with that, or no, I don't want to complete this sharing operation. But in both cases, you need to call the report completed method on that share operation object. This is the indication to the shell saying, okay, I'm done. And that's when it returns back to the caller. So in my project that I was doing just over here, I have got also a share target in here. So the package app manifest, just to go into there, we go into declarations. Actually, just stop it running. I'll run it again in a minute so we can see. So you can see we've obviously in declarations, there's loads of different kinds. We've chosen a share target. I'll give it a bit of a description. We have added just a single data format. It's saying, okay, I know how to handle text. We could add more into there. It could be RTF, but I don't want to do that. So you can support any file type, or you can add a specific file type. And that bit actually doesn't matter. So that one we can simply deploy to my target. Let's just deploy it, which installs it onto my emulator. And now if I go back, so going back from OneNote, I stopped it running, didn't I? Mm. If I hadn't stopped it running, the previous app would still have been running, which would have been nice. So now we can share something else. Something else. And share that. And now our app has turned up in the list there as one of the potential share targets as well. We could share with OneNote, or we could share with our little app, which does this stunning thing, puts it on the screen. You notice I've got some UI on here saying, okay, yeah, I'm good with that, or no, I'm not happy about that. So I'll say, yeah, actually, we share it. Now, obviously, the share target app would do something more interesting than simply show it back at the user. In reality, you know, if you're Facebook or Twitter or something, you send it up to the cloud and share it properly. So, but you know, now we're back with the source app again. So nice and simple. That's kind of how it works. Sharing best practices. If you're a share source, share as many different formats as you can, if possible. It just widens both the numbers of apps that you can share to, and also gives them as rich as possible a type of data for them to handle. So they can choose to use any, all, or none of what you send it, actually. So they'll obviously choose the richest data format that makes sense to whatever the shared target is going to do with it. In the targets, just you need to keep the sharing UX. It needs to be a transient UI, so it's going to be like one page or two pages, and it needs to be completely self-contained. So absolutely no home buttons that are going to send you back to look like completely boggle the end user's mind, because they suddenly end up in some other part of the app that really doesn't make sense when they were trying to share to it. Yeah, think about large data transfers. There's all kinds of stuff that if you're going to be handling big data transfers up to the cloud, use the background transfer API, which we're going to cover tomorrow morning in the networking session. And you must always call that report completed method to send the user back to where they came from. So that's kind of it. Comparing with Windows, this is completely converged. It works both the same way, apart from obviously the charms bar and the having to put your own UI. But the way it all works is the same, complete API convergence. There are a few things that we don't support from big Windows. There's this thing, this idea of long-running shares. And Windows will keep a share target running quietly in the background once it's been activated, so it can be quickly reactivated. That doesn't happen on phone. It's always killed in terms of once it's done, it's done. In terms of making sure that we conserve phone resources. And we also do not support quick links, which is something that's on big Windows. The source application will be suspended when the share is invoked. Again, that's different from big Windows, where the source kind of happens as a transient UI that doesn't hide the source app. But as you saw with phone, we get the share UI is a full screen display, so the source app is suspended. And of course, that does mean, while any app that's suspended, if the user goes off and does something else while they're in the middle of sharing, it could mean that your app source app could be terminated. So just bear that in mind. You have to, that's just normal termination. You have to handle that situation. Right, lastly, in this module, we're going to talk about picker contracts, which is the file open picker and file save picker. These are actually surprisingly interesting. So pickers aren't new to Windows Phone either. We had the photo chooser task in .NET APIs for Silverlight, Windows Phone 8, where you can go and pick a photo from your album. However, in Windows Phone 8.1, the file open picker and file save picker massively, you know, give you, again, it's the same idea with a share contract. It kind of abstracts the things very nicely and gives you allows you to share, to open files from a wide variety of places and from a wide variety of apps. So if your app on the left there, where you want to click a link that says something like you're going to invoke a file open picker, where you want to go and pick a photo. So at the next point, you get the provider comes up again. So the provider comes up and gives you a choices of selecting from the phone. So you can go off to the camera roll and that sort of thing. But there's also an option to look at apps. You can actually go and pick a file from an app. So the obvious choice here is OneDrive. You might want to go and pick something from your OneDrive. So then it activates the target app, and the provider UI then handles the picking option operations for you. So your app doesn't have anything to do with this at this point. Your end user picks the file, and at that point, the picked app is transferred back to the picker again, the original app. So again, this nice kind of, the shell is very much involved in this in the middle, in helping the user to select who you're picking from. So the whole point of this is the app shouldn't care where a file comes from or where it goes to. They also need to be able to access any type of file. It also means that, you know, it allows the user, the app, to get at files that are not in its own folders. So again, you know, Matthias was talking about the known folders, and he made the point that in order to use the known folders and the storage APIs directly, you're going to go and open a file in that folder. Sure, you can do that, but you have to declare the capability to say, yeah, I want to go to the pictures library, or, you know, I want to go to the music library. So you have to declare that capability. Now, with the pickers, you can still go, with the file open pickers, you can still go and pick a file from those. But because the user is involved and has decided and has been totally involved with where that file comes from, you don't need the capability because that permission is implied. So it means, actually, it's not just picking files from the pictures library. It can go and get a picture from the cloud or from another app or some other app that, or you know, I don't know, a Flickr provider app or something. There's loads of different apps that could be the source for that picture that you want. And it supports both open and saves, and it must work well on low-cost devices. Now, in this case, that does introduce some changes from Big Windows, which I'll go through. But again, this is all available for Windows Runtime apps and also for Silverlight apps, Silverlight 8.1 apps. So let's look at the client app. Now, on Windows, this is where, on Big Windows, and this is where if you're doing a universal app, you're going to have to have a bit of hash if def going on here if you're sharing the source code, the file that's got this code in it. Because on Big Windows, you just new up your file open picker. You can set some properties on it, like suggested start location and that sort of thing. You put the file type filter to say what kinds of files you want the user to be able to go and open, to go and pick. And then you call openpicker.picksinglefileasync, and that's an awaitable, so you just wait. And your app just sits there and waits, and then the user picks the file and comes back, and then your app carries on processing it. That doesn't happen on Windows Phone. Now, the reason why we've got this rather weird looking and continue method is that this is the need to support low memory devices. It's all about the 512 meg devices, really. So you start the same way, although some properties like suggested start location and view mode are ignored on, or you may even, I'm not sure if they fail, but you can't use them on Windows Phone. You still set your file type filters. Then you can set some continuation data, which is just a bit of kind of contextual data, some useful information that means something to you in the app at that point. And then you call pick single file and continue. And at this point, your app is suspended. And of course, potentially may be terminated later on, because any suspended app could be terminated if the whole phone gets under memory pressure. Then the file open picker shell UI takes over. The user picks which app they want to use. They go and pick the file. And then when they've picked the file, at that point, the original app will get reactivated and to handle it. So there's some special ways you have to code it to handle this. At some point, you get back to the same point we were in the Windows app, but there's a little bit of plumbing code you have to write in order to get to that point. So this is that activation after the file picker. I'm only going to handle the Windows runtime apps case here. When we talk about the Silverlight one, it's a slightly different thing. So on Thursday, when we talk about Silverlight 8.1 apps, I'll come back to this. But for now, this is how a Windows runtime app. You need to override the onActivated method. We met this before earlier in this module. And this time, you're looking at the iActivated event args and saying, is this a file open picker continuation event args? Got to be a candidate for longest event args name in the book. If it is a file open picker continuation event args, then we know that this is a file open picker continuation. So we do our normal initialization code because we might be coming back from terminated, so we might have to create the frame all over and all this kind of stuff. And then when we've done all that standard boilerplate initialization code, we then navigate to the page where we initiated that file open picker from, back to the same page where we kind of were before we got suspended, which in this case is a page called profile page. And then we do the same kind of thing before. What we do is we code up on that profile page, we put a property onto it, and in this case it's called file picker event, that property. And the type of that property is file open picker continuation event args. So then we just simply, having navigated to the page, we get that args that we've been passed into this onActivated and plug it into that page. We simply put it into the setter, put it into that property on the page. And then step two is in the setter of that property. So here's that property at the top here, the file picker event property. In the setter, then we call a method, which in this case is called continue file open picker, and pass it that file picker event args. So this is the point at which we rejoin the code path that we were doing in a big Windows app. So you can imagine on big Windows app, they've just called pick single file async, and when that returns, they then carry on. So this continuation file open picker method that we've finally got to by all this crazy reactivation and navigating, we're back in the same place. Phew. Saver files just the same kind of pattern. So we got save picker, pick save file async on big Windows, and it just carries on. On Windows Phone, we've got pick single file and continue, and the same process happens as with the file open picker. By the way, I haven't really explained. A file save picker is like a file open picker, except you go and pick either a file to overwrite, or you say, I want to create a new file here, and then it returns to you the picked save file, and then you can fill it up from the save data into it from in the source app.
So it's just like the grabbing a folder file out of a folder.
Yeah, exactly so.
And then you can write the stream or write to it.
Yep. Yeah, exactly so. Okay, so right, let's run. What are we doing here? Still running from the previous demo. So let's go and open the next one. The last one, my mouse trigger finger's going quite dead after all doing this all day. Okay, so it's got a file open picker demo, and we've actually got a Silverlight one in there as well, just for interest, but I'll talk about that on Thursday. So here's our app. And I'm going to go off to my profile page, and this is a link, change profile picture. Before I click it, I'll just show you the code for that, which you won't be surprised to see. Here's what we saw on the slides, which is, I'm in the wrong page. This one, which is, here we go, change picture click. We file open picker, we add some file type filters, we put some arbitrary data into there, which actually we don't use, and then we call pick single file and continue. So let's do that. So now we're in the file picker. This is the shell that's taken over at this point. Because they were all pictures, it's done a smart thing and says it's taking you straight to the camera roll, because that's probably where you want to go. We can take a picture. So, okay, let's take a glorious, ooh, that's lovely, yeah, we'll take that picture. And then we've got our picture, and we're back in my source app again, so we've picked app. And we can actually go off to do it again, but this time go to apps, you can choose location. You would see this by default if there was any ambiguity. Now, in here, I haven't got any file, I haven't got any other open picker providers, but you can have apps could be in here as well, like the OneDrive app you'd expect to be in here. And in time, as more and more 8.1 apps get created, this list will get longer and longer. But there's only the phone, which is, you can go off to, we can go off to all sorts of places if you go phone. Well, as you can see. Anyway, I'm going to go back. That is kind of a very brief picker. Now, there's a complication or an interesting another element to all of this. First of all, comparison with Windows, it's kind of different. And these properties are ignored. The picker provider apps, similar to share target apps, you can create apps. An example is the OneDrive app. And I'm not going to talk about that because that's kind of, if you're interested in that, it's all well documented, and we need to wrap this up, frankly. So I'm going to finish just by very quickly talking about the access cache, Windows.storage.access cache. What is this? What is access cache? Well, okay, so you've got this app that's using the file pickers, and this allows you to open and save a file at any location. So the source app has got back a storage file object, but that storage file object could be anywhere. It could be in the cloud. It could be attached to app my best file provider app ever. You don't know. And the source app doesn't need to know, because it shouldn't need to know. But if you think about if the user runs this app and has picked a file successfully from my favorite file picker provider app, they come along and you run your app again a few days later. They want to probably, quite more often than not, they're quite often in these situations, want to reopen the same file. So how do you do that? Well, you could show them the file open picker provider again, You could do the whole file open thing, but that would be kind of tedious, and that's a bad user experience. So actually what you want is a way for the user to be able to reopen files that they have already worked with, because they've already, you know, they've already said, I want to open that file, because they did it once before. So there's kind of this implied consent to use that file again there. And the way you do that is with this thing called the access cache. More specifically in there, there's a class called storage application permissions. So every app has two lists. One is called the future access list, and the other is called the most recently used list, FA and MRU for short. So the MRU is where you can put most recently used files and folders into it. And that is a 25 item limit, and it's automatically managed. So when it fills up, it just bumps the oldest one off the bottom. So you can just keep on sticking. Every time you pick a file with the file open picker or file save picker, just do it. Just put it in the MRU. You may not use it, but you may want to find that you want to use it. The future access list is much bigger than that. It has a 1,000 item limit, but that's not automatically managed. So you actually have to put some code in. If it fills up, you need to manage that and trim stuff out of it. But both of these, what they do is they store a storage file or a storage folder, but a bit more than that, they kind of store the implied permissions with it as well. It means you can pull out, you can get out of this list a reference to a storage file that isn't in the app's local folders. It could be out in the camera roll, or it could be in OneDrive, or it could be in, you know, my best file provider picker files data store, whatever that is. I'm going to stop saying that. So the way you use it, here you go. This is continue file open picker. Saving it into it couldn't be easier. You say storage application permissions dot most recently used list dot add, and then you add the file, and you can put some metadata on it. Similarly, to add it to the future access list, just add it. So there you go, and that's very easy. And then to retrieve it again, you can go and look into that list. You can enumerate it like that. Or when you save it on the previous slide, you get a string token back. You can use that to key into the list and get that out in future. So you could store that token into your roaming settings, for example, or into whatever. So, and then use that to access the list. It's easier to show than it is to describe. This one actually here, oh, look. This app actually has on the main page three things. So if we go now to profile page and pick yet another, it's going to take a new picture, which looks spookily like the other one, because actually that's all the built-in camera takes. But if I go back now, we got two, because every time I'm picking a file, I'm saving it in the most recently used list. And in my main page, I've got some simple logic here. In the load state, I'm going off to the storage application positions dot most recently used list. I'm picking out the top three entries, and I'm pulling out the token associated with each entry in turn. I'm getting the file again, which is not at all in my storage. It's out in the camera roll, remember? Mm-hmm. And then I'm getting the image, and I'm sticking it onto the screen.
And this is all without the permissions required to access the NUM folder?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Because you've implied the permissions, because the user's already picked this
right.
In the past.
Yep.
And the other good thing I didn't mention about it is really cool is that these lists, they track things. So if, for example, a file was on the storage card and then they copy it back to the phone storage, the reference to it stored in this list will move with it. So you don't lose it if they actually move it around, as long as it's still addressable, of course. Now, I'm just showing these images on the screen here, but obviously you whatever UI you want to provide in your app to allow a user to go back to, you know, you used this last time, do you want to reopen it? So whatever it works for you in your app. So that is that. So in summary about these guys, this is adding it all up. File associations, yeah, we've always had that, actually. And URI associations, yeah, we've always had that. So we've got that across all three, Phone 8, Windows Phone 8.1 and Windows 8.1. Share was kind of limited on Phone 8. We had some, but it definitely now we've got the full share contract, so it's really flexible for Phone 8.1 and Windows 8.1. The file open picker and file safe picker, definitely didn't have any concept of that on Windows Phone 8, but we now have great support for that on Phone 8.1 and Windows 8.1. It's cool stuff, and you know, think about adding these to your apps. You really can make your apps really shine on Windows Phone using all this kind of good stuff. So it's all new possibilities for allowing your apps to share richly out to all kinds of different providers and getting apps from other things, like there's an example. So you can actually really help your users engage with your app in new ways. We're done for day one. Well, which is great. Thank you very much for any of you who have stuck with us all the way. And if you're still up at this time in Europe, go to bed. We're going to wrap now. There is going to be a poll straight after this. The poll is already up, I'm told. So please, please take the time to let us know how we're doing and tell us if you're liking the content. Give us feedback. That's really important to us.
Yes, please.
And we really hope you will join us at 9 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time tomorrow morning. We have another whole day of great, great stuff. What are we doing tomorrow?
We're kicking off with background tasks. We're going to cover geolocation. We're going to cover tiles. Tiles is a very exciting one for me. Contacts and calendar, sensors, camera.
Bluetooth LE.
Bluetooth, enterprise. It's going to be a really packed day of a lot of the most fun stuff that we have in Windows Phone. And we'll finish up that day with a great session on tooling.
Yeah. So, and again, all that's going to be available for Windows Runtime apps and Windows Phone Silverlight 8.1 apps.
Yep.
So, all cool stuff.
Yeah.
See you tomorrow.
All right.